Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. I want to say afternoon because I miss daylight savings so much, but it is the early evening. This is Kirby Monsters Radio with the Sunday Show. Today, our guest is David Williams. He's a writer, but more importantly, well, not more importantly, but he's also an engineer, an inventor, and a pretty good commentarian. He does see the facts, and he does weave through the bullshit pretty well. So looking forward to hearing his take on because none of us can be exact these days, but what he knows about what the capabilities are over North Korea. And he's also got quite a background on the Cold War and how nuclear, it's not war, but nuclear deterrence has gone on for decades. And I'm looking forward to hearing that. And then on the back end of the show, with my co-host Jack Jodell and Wayne Johnson, and perhaps David will stick around, to talk about the five lies every day the president tells.
I was going to say, there's too many to cover in an hour show, much less.
David, how you been?
Yes.
And how's it looking on your skies in Ogistan?
I've been doing good. I live here in Ogistan. Sort of interesting times that we're living in right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Thrill a minute.
Thrill a minute, yes.
That's
as far as the North Korean situation, it seems to be going down a path that I don't think anybody would like to see. Capabilities of North Korea. I think they've shown their technological capabilities of producing a capable ICBM. The latest, the Hwasong 15, which reminds me just exactly like a Titan II. It's a big improvement over the previous missile before them, as this one is. The 14 was. Had four engines, but it used thrusters for steers. And this one, being a significant improvement, it has two engines, and they're what they call gimbaled engines, where the thrust nozzle is used for steering. So it is a significant improvement. Plus, it's a lot larger, and the range has been extended. They were saying that it's an altitude of about 2,780 miles high and about 600 miles out, which puts it about 8,000 to 9,000 miles of range, which means they can pretty much hit any place in the United States. Still a couple of technical hurdles they have to get past. One is what they call the RV or the reentry vehicle, which is where the nuke goes. That has to survive the reentry, and that's it's a bit of a challenge because of the high heat and stresses that are involved, G forces. So they'll probably have at least one more test, or maybe two more tests, to prove that out. As far as the RV feasibility, and then also the guidance system. Guidance system is really sort of one of the toughest things to crack, and they can just lob one over, but the guidance system is what produces the accuracy where they say they want to hit a particular city. But it's really sort of stunning how fast they've I was stunned that they went from just a plain old atomic bomb you know, around the 14 to 20 kiloton range. And then suddenly they came out with that 400 kiloton hydrogen bomb. I mean, that's a big technological leap. You know, it took us like 8 years to get that far, and I think they did it in about 3 or 4. So,
I just want, Dave, I would ask the question,
do you think
maybe the Chinese or the Russians are helping them to develop these advances more quickly?
Well, I don't know if they're helping them directly, but I know that they're using the Soviet engines on the ICBM, old Soviet engines. But, you know, the relationship between China and North Korea is sort of a really awkward one. And you know, they've been real close, and then right when Chairman Mao died, they had sort of a big split. And North Korea has always sort of played the Soviets against the Chinese back and forth, you know. But right when they were really close to the Chinese, but then when Mao died, they went through sort of a drastic realization, and I think they actually went through a famine that really hurt them quite a bit. And so they sided back with Russia or the Soviet Union, and then they went eventually, this is during the 70s, and then later on they sort of re-established a connection back with China, and that's where it's at right now. You know, they're But even so, they're sort of like, distant cousins, not really close. You know, I mean, it's like a necessity. Obviously, China doesn't want a whole bunch of North Korean, you know, Russia people swarming into their country. But they still, in the meantime, they don't want a war over there. I mean, they came to the rescue back in the Korean War, and the Chinese are really cautious, and they're trying to rein in North Korea a little bit. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, and I'm probably just sort of ranting on here a little bit. North Korea certainly has its right to defend itself, and. Back in the George Bush days, they actually had a policy that they had with Clinton that they were not pursuing atomic weapons, and they were trying to have a advancement to the south as far as coming up with some outstanding treaties, and it was called the Sunshine Policy. But when George Bush came to power, he nullified that and declared that North Korea was a rogue state. And so that's when they started pursuing the nuclear weapons again. And Obama just sort of took a policy of strategic, I think it was called strategic patience. But I think once that North Korea determined that they didn't want to be like Iraq and Libya, there really wasn't anything that they could that was going to stop them. You know, and here we are today.
I have a question, David. You're a pretty level-headed fellow. You certainly have your ideas of what's good and true and honest as far as leadership goes, but we have obviously in the United States presidency right now, someone who is not mentally stable. Do you think that extends to North Korea? Do you think Kim Il-sung over there is has got a harness of sanity going on and a table full of ministers who will listen to hold it back?
I don't think he's the madman that he's portrayed to be in the U.S. press.
Yeah.
No, I think he is definitely a cult of personality. I mean, if you look at the way that the leadership of North Korea has gone on from the 1950s, you know, Kim Jong-il and Kim Jong-un, and, you know, he pretty much gets anything that he wants. He's definitely a cult of personality, egotistical, and but he's not a madman. I mean, he knows what's required to protect his country, and Yeah, he was the, if you remember, he was declared part of the Axis of Evil way back when. And,
yeah.
You know, it is his responsibility to protect his country. And you also have to think of the mindset of the population over there. Now, the Korean War was
horrific.
By any other judgment, if it hadn't been right after World War II, it would have been considered a war crime. I mean, we napalmed and burned down every standing building in every single major city of that. I think at the last I saw of the numbers, we killed like 26 or 27% of the population over there. And they said that there wasn't a single standing building higher than 1 foot. And they, you know, it drove most of them underground. And you can imagine, I mean, nowadays, like how it used to be here where we had to say the Pledge of Allegiance every day in the schools, they have to say basically the Pledge of Hatred towards the United States. You know, they had museums where it's like, here's the United States, you know, and this is all the stuff that, this is why we hate them. I mean, it's the hatred towards the United States, you know, mentally it could be deserved, but it is definitely taught from our early stage of their life. So, you know, if you put that along, that hatred along with his cult of personality, I mean, for them, he's a hero.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that he's elevated to God status, but it's pretty close.
Yeah. For the majority of the population, I saw a piece by one of the 60 Minutes reporters, I think it was a week ago today, and he was interviewing North Korean residents, and they were exactly saying such. Then there were a few dissidents. I mean, we did mostly, and interestingly, most of those defectors are people from government positions like military and government subsidization with certain industry. If they get close to getting out, they get out.
Yeah, I mean, make no mistake about it. It's a harsh government. I mean, it's they do have a pretty strict censorship, and they do have their equivalent of the prisons for various infractions. And I don't think you'd get very far if you tore up a picture of Kim Jong Un in the main square there. But
There's a lot of starvation too. There's a lot of ill-fed people and rampant worms and all that sort of thing.
Harsh conditions. I mean, the conditions are pretty rugged, but you know, like any other country, if an outsider or perceived outsider of aggression is attacking a country, what does it do? It tends to rally the population together and make them overlook their hardships.
And
it sort of plays into Kim Jong-un's plans or his power, because it unites the people against an outside enemy.
For sure.
But anyway, getting back to the latest, it's very worrisome. It's under the best conditions, and if we had, you know, on our side a leader that had a bit of sanity to him, someone that was able to stay away from the Twitter and didn't make his foreign policies in the 140 characters or less, you know, it would be, I would say, like a 50-50 thing. But at this moment in time, I would say there's probably an 80% chance that we're going to war with North Korea.
That's horrible.
I just don't see it any way. And the bad thing about it is, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if 500,000 are dead the first 24 hours. It's going to be terrible.
Jesus Christ.
Well, they'll be using nuclear weapons too. There will be no holds barred, and you know, it's very frightening, and it's really unnecessary to have to go to war, but it will happen.
Yeah, I mean, you have this. Our leader, the president. You know, there's this guy that got sort of cornered, or at least he feels that he's cornered. And you got this guy, Trump, that's going over and poking him in the forehead as much as he can, saying, what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? You know, instead of just leaving the guy be and trying to eventually work out. I mean, there was some diplomatic progress between North and South Korea. You know, they're still at war, actually.
Right.
They've all had a ceasefire. They're still at war. But with the Sunshine Policy way back when, you know, during the Clinton years, there was actually some diplomatic progress in trying to, you know, bring some sort of resolution to that. But now you've got, I mean, it started with George Bush, but Trump, he has just taken it to the extreme. He's,
we don't even have an ambassador to South Korea. It's unbelievable.
No, it's unbelievable. I mean, you've got all the conditions right for coming out with a particular outcome that is not the outcome that you want. There's no indicators that shows that there's going to be a positive outcome to this.
Well,
oh, yeah.
And also, let me pose this question. Now, we've also had some generals say that if Trump gave the order to, you know, push the button, that basically, you know, we have the Nuremberg aspect about was just following orders that didn't work well for the Nazis. There's been some that said that, no, we're not going to follow that order. But should they do it, should they find somebody to step up and do it and do what the President of the United States says? What kind
of
military pact of Russia and China then coming to their aid and sending their nuclear weapons to us?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's another thing. I don't think China is going to stand by while North Korea is attacked.
Exactly.
I mean,
that is my point.
They've got too much to lose. You know, it's a border that's right on their. A country that's right on their border, and they just got.
Well, the
much
Korean
to
War, they when you know the U.S. troops were pushing up and actually driving the North Koreans back. That's when China stepped in and sent in their million man army.
Right.
Drove them clear back to the 38th parallel. But
yeah.
You know,
exactly,
thing,
and I can see that happening again.
If China
only
on
a global
level started secret negotiations. I would
China,
like to see that.
China,
you know,
starting
South Korea doesn't really want a war either, of course.
No, nobody really does, except it seems a couple of guys on the block, one standing on
being
his tiptoes. One standing on his tiptoes trying to say, hey, you can't get away with this against me, and the other just a full-out blown ego with absolutely no monitor on it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Just as you described, and it is very frightening. It's our Cuban Missile Crisis, if you would. I once heard my Uncle Alex describe a scenario such as what you just said with actual with the actual fear in the 70s that some terrorist organizations in the Middle East had gotten their hands on nuclear weapons. Somebody's got their computer.
Sorry about that. It just popped up. There, let me. Okay, sorry about that.
No problem.
Yeah, my screen popped up. You know, another thing that is that, you know, it's not just the United States that's involved here. It's Japan. And, you know, just in conventional weapons, you know, North Korea is the fourth largest army in the world, and they got tremendous amounts of artillery already set up right past the DMZ zone at the 38th parallel for South Korea. And Seoul's
Seoul will be annihilated if there's a war.
Oh, yeah. So not even bring in the nuclear aspect of it. You know, Seoul, Korea is going to be toast.
Yeah.
That is just, you know, it. So here's the real challenge, David. I would ask you, ask anyone, how is this averted? How is this stopped? Do you think
you have to have a leader that's able to ignore his own ego ignore the rhetoric that's being produced by a leader that has made it his platform of power, just to ignore that and work behind the scenes. So North Korea doesn't go to war.
No, I don't think
they don't. I mean, who wants to be completely annihilated? And, you know, and that's what would happen. I mean, they've already gone through that where the whole country has to go on the ground. Who wants that to happen again? And, you know, I think even though Kim Jong-un is going to be spouting his rhetoric, I think behind the scenes, there's plenty of important people that can be contacted that can work out a deal. But the thing is we have a leader right now that's got such an ego, and he doesn't have any kind of foreign policy planning whatsoever. His foreign policy is 140 characters or less.
It's all impulse and no prior thought. It's all impulse. That's all it is.
Well, the plain truth is that the White House and all of our major cabinet positions and institutions, especially the State Department, are filled with incompetence at leadership levels right now. It's completely incompetent. Anybody who says to me that these generals you choose chose were competent, I give you Michael motherfucking Flynn. I mean, come on. He went fucking nuts, and Obama said, oh, we got to put this one down, you know, and got rid of him. I mean, you, there's no competence in or near the White House, and that Sarah.
Well, and then you've got Tillerson trying to bleed the State Department absolutely dry. There's all kinds of important positions that are unfilled and will not be filled.
This is an international crisis, and he no longer has, even if he wanted to or had the intelligence to, he doesn't have the apparatus anymore, the tools that were required to avert the crisis. I mean, it's not like you had where they pulled together the crisis team for the Cuba Missile Crisis. You know, they had all those
those are the best and brightest in the country. We don't have that in power right now.
No, there's nothing there. Like you said, there's not even an ambassador. So we have no tools in place that will allow us to depressurize this crisis. And that's what's the worrisome thing about it is, you know, you could probably get around Trump if you have professionals in place that would work the ways and means of getting to a conclusion, but you don't have that. That's why I'm very pessimistic on the whole thing.
It's very frightening.
It is.
And at the same time, it seems that. But I would also mention on the getting away from the microscope here and looking at the macrocosm, if you will. I mean, or the planet. We are not alone in these kinds of great, horrendous leadership breakdowns. It may not look like it, but the UK is suffering under some great strains and divisions also, and calls of incompetence. There were 20,000 people on Friday night in the streets of Tel Aviv calling for Netanyahu's head. Desra Israel.
They should be. That
guy's
an absolute idiot.
But I was shocked to see that only AP, it only hit the news wires. It didn't hit the talking heads. I shouldn't be so surprised, but, you know, until it becomes a flame. To me, that's a flame. Spain has just gone through a huge fracture in leadership and holding on and stomping down.
And Putin loves this because there's discord among the allies.
Well, and there are problems in Argentina. There are problems in other South American countries that go to the heart of leadership. And this huge mirror is shining up to all of the people on the planet who are your leaders. And you can nit and pick about all the, you know, autocracy, the kleptocracies, the capitalism, the you know, the all of the 1% and all of that, and just keep the circular argument going, or you can rise above and say, what is the problem here? And it's basically a very social one too. I think we're seeing that very clearly with how on one side you've got all of these people being outed as predators and pedophiles.
Oh.
And such.
Yeah.
And on the other side, you have this lunacy going on. It's not just men. It's women, too, who are patriarchs. It's patriarchy. It's a goddamn sky gods, you know, the one god bullshit. And I'm not saying it's just confined there, but it has a lot to do with it. It's a consciousness. It's a way of thinking. It's a behavior pattern in the global consciousness, and that's why I think this huge mirror is there right now. Okay, I'm going to shut up.
Well, it does seem to be like a alarming amount of nationalism that seems to be popping up all around the globe. And you know, you wonder, what is the driving force behind that? Is it economic? Is it because of wealth concentration? You had essentially the same thing back in 1934 or so, where you had all these countries of nationalists, where Italy and
very dangerous, Japan, very dangerous phenomenon.
It's very,
and you know,
it's very.
We were pursuing a course of globalism for quite a while, and it made a lot of people very rich, and it really made a lot of people very poor, and kept a lot of people very poor. But globalism is kind of out of favor now in certain circles, and it's starting to be replaced. I hate to say it, but it is starting to be replaced by nationalism in a number of countries, including our own. And that is a very dangerous situation. Nativistic nonsense and all that crazy stuff, it doesn't work.
But on the other side of that, you have an emerging global culture right here, right now, with the tool we are using at this very moment. Do you follow where I'm going? I know more people
in
other countries.
It's like two extremes. I mean, one,
absolutely,
one side,
right.
The internet is allowing sort of a global awareness that's taking it
right
off to this side. And then you got the nationalism thing that's people are being pulled in more and more towards their own self-identity. It's very strange.
Something's got to pop.
Producing
we can't keep
cabin
on this course forever.
It's an warp. It's an extreme warp and whoop that was not present at the time in the 30s when things fell down and people were really pretty much more or less isolated from this kind of exchange. And
right,
this, and you know, David, to the social consciousness, I still think that that's what you said, what Roundtree stands for. I think it's the difference between then and now. And I have some faith in it. You know, I see people getting along. Like my friend Sabina Siddiqui over in Pakistan, my God, she started out just chatting with us all and posting and talking on Facebook, and now she's sitting behind a TV camera in Pakistan as a dissenting and assenting voice.
Cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
I think a lot of it maybe is you know, when the social media and the blogging and everything first came out, you know, I was under the opinion that you could have this opportunity that hasn't ever came around before, where you have the capability of putting forth ideas and other people from around the world with the same ideas, gathering together and coming together with like minds and maybe producing some social change. But, you know,
it's been slow going.
I underestimated the sort of the double-edged sword of that, where the amount of propaganda and the amount of manipulation
disinformation
and you know, I guess you'd have to look at it like a double-edged sword, but how quickly that came on, the manipulation of opinions, you know, it's very sophisticated and it's happening all the time. And I think what it is the nation states realize the power that social media and the internet has, and they've sort of taken it away from the, I guess, the potential for positive change, and they sort of made it into a weapon, in a way, a cyber weapon.
Well, I have to agree with you. They really have, but I saw that coming. I mean,
I saw it coming, but I didn't think it would come on so quickly and so strong. I mean, it's so organized.
I got to tell you, I think that it did for a good purpose. I think that it's waking people up quicker.
Yeah, yeah. If people realize it, that they are being manipulated, then that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Right? You know, and perhaps you can take some of those techniques, and if it's for a good cause, you know, not totally some of the dark stuff, but maybe look at some of those organizational methods and try to bring those in and make that power your own power. So I don't know. I mean, who knows where it's going to go in the next 10 years?
Well, it goes whichever, you know, it's still going to be an individual journey, even if we're in chains. But the thing is that these extremes right now are here for a reason. And the other end of that equation is all about resources, environment, and breath. And we're past a point here. And so the extremes are, something will tip. We're at precipice of evolution.
Also, I want to bring up another point, and I think this is playing significantly, is that people, they develop opinions, and then when they get on social media and stuff like that, they don't look for other opinions to come up with a balanced outcome. They look for opinions that will reinforce what they've already believed.
Exactly.
So
it's a me too kind of a community.
Yeah, these magnification factors that are pulling people towards the extremes.
It's true that happens, but I don't think that it's the overall effect. I think there are a lot of, I mean, I know I read, hell, I'm stunned by some of what I read. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? That can't be who's saying that. But then I reread it, and I think about it. And I balance it with what my instincts are and what I know. And oftentimes, I adjust. I learn and grow.
Well, that's because you have an open mind, Gwen. I mean, think of the people that have a real dogmatic personality, where they're not looking to...
They're just looking
mean,
they're for just reinforcement looking for, of their beliefs constantly.
Yeah.
Well, that, exactly. There's also, too, those who are just grimudgeon pessimistics, and I don't care if you gave them blooms and rainbows and sunshine, they'd find fault in something.
Absolutely.
Because that has to justify their existence of being dissatisfied with themselves.
And
then there's the paranoid quadrant.
Magnified as well. I mean, look
then
at
the paranoid quadrant,
that,
afraid of the world and afraid of progress.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
it is a personality type that dogmatic and
come out
with the wildest, most crazy conspiracies.
I've seen friends that I know, and I know that they're going through a lot of this because they're more and more stressed over their own, you know, as I am. I mean, you know, Christ, I'm trying to hew out a way to get into a doctor's office still. And yet you have people who have worked all their lives and have put in the last 2 years, the disruption to their lives and how they live them, and the fear of losing their medical coverage, first of all.
Oh, yeah.
How about paying old Social Security? That's what's in this new tax bill.
Yeah.
And all of it. So they become.
That new tax bill is such a lie. It isn't even funny.
Well, you guys, now you get the woo-woo minute from the medicine woman, okay? Listen, they pulled this shit off at 2 minutes to Mercury retrograde.
Yeah, just ridiculous.
I mean, okay, yeah. Listen to the witch here. They're going to have more trouble bouncing this thing back and forth. And the aspects that were hitting them as they were doing it were showing up already, but there are going to be many frat balls on this one. I don't know if it's actually going to make it through. I would say.
I hope it doesn't. I hope it doesn't.
But I mean.
It's disastrous. Any way you look at it, it's disastrous unless you're a billionaire and you want more money in your pocket. That's all it is. It's a giveaway.
Yeah, that's, you know, we expected that anyway. And it's clear. This is what's so stunning to me, is how clear it is what Republicans represent in this moment. It's very
clear. Oh, the donor class.
Well, no. I mean, what Republicans...
Well, that's it, Gwen. They're trying to pay off their donors.
Well, yes, they're paying their masters, but Democrats do the same thing.
You had some people on the Democratic side that were raising some stink, but I wish... It seemed to be like a more cohesive organization that's against it.
Yeah.
You know, I wish they'd gel together.
Yeah, I mean, what kind of team do we have on our side, if they're on our side at all? You know, it's like, what happened to them?
Well, and the thing is that with the incompetence of Democratic leadership in Washington at the moment,
pathetic.
It's
a bought-out party. Gwen, let's talk about it. It's a bought-out party. They're too influenced by corporate power and money, and it's too much of a money thing in Washington. That's the root of the whole problem right there.
I would remind you all that there are campaigns being waged right now. In the state of Florida, do you know how many people have signed up and gotten the signatures and gotten the money up and crowd-resourced to get themselves out there to get elected under the Democratic ticket?
That's
a yay for them. I mean, we had a couple of three of them here in Oklahoma that recently
won. Oh, my God. The county that went 78% for Trump just elected a lesbian to...
I know.
I know it blows you away, doesn't it? That's a good thing.
I had to read that headline several times. I go... Is this Oklahoma? Come on.
That's a good thing.
There's a 24-year-old girl named Allison, I can't remember her last name, who got made the head of the Democratic Party in Oklahoma. And she's just gotten a lesbian elected in a red county that bleeds. I mean, that to me, those little diamonds beginning to sparkle and shine. The glint of that light is what has to catch your eye and fill your heart right now.
And you know how these people are winning, Gwen? They're parading local issues, and they're talking about things that matter to the local population.
That's right.
And that's why they're winning.
Yes.
You know,
and
the Democratic leadership needs to take a look at and see just what's happening there, and maybe say, you know, our ideas are sort of not following along with what the people want. Maybe we should look for some new leadership here, some fresh blood, and try to get back to who we thought we were, who we once were.
Good point, David. I'm with you
100%. A lot of people also spend, and I'm just as guilty of it, as spending our time looking at national news and national politics because
it's local.
At the head, you know. And everybody's got their eye on Alabama right now, and that's this push me, pull me now again. Will you take a look at the symbolism around this? You got one guy who's a Democrat who came up as a prosecutor who put the KKK, who committed horrendous acts.
Murdered those children.
Killed those poor little girls there in the Baptist church.
Yeah, and then on the other side, you got a man who is credibly, in my opinion, a pedophile.
Pedophile, all the way.
Oh, there's no doubt. I will agree with that. That's what he is. He was barred from going to a mall because he was trying to pick up underage girls there. And when he was 30 years old.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a pervert.
Really, no.
That is a pervert.
He's a sick puppy.
Well, you know, guys, here's the thing, though. You see all the symbols that surround us right now, and if you just look at things, see, you know, I'm an old card reader here, and I look at symbols as they're cast on the table, and I can tell you, well, this represents this, and I'm just using my instincts and intuition. Maybe a little whisper in my ear, but it's like this tax bill, and it's like these great extreme dark and light symbols that are being put up before not just America, but the whole world right now in one context or another. And it coincides with the idea, not the idea, but the knowledge that most educated, intelligent people have, and you don't have to, I don't mean education as somebody who went to 4 years of school, I mean somebody who perhaps was taught in their village how to irrigate crops and has good common horse sense. I mean everybody on the planet who's intelligent, and they're looking up and they're seeing this and they're going, whoa man, we're about to lose our planet and this shit's coming down.
Yeah.
I mean, really, that, you know, the moon is in the seventh house. Mercury is aligning with Mars. It has three times.
Right. Yep.
So we've got these huge symbols before us. And how do we spend our time trying to forget about it? Well, I know David, like me, is somebody who will go, let me go marathon a few X-Files. But do you know, we're so into the symbolism that we're eating it up in our art. I mean, where's the zombie apocalypse? Take a look at the people around you in your community. Can't you spot the zombies? The zombies are women in Alabama who are white Republicans who'd say, I don't care if he, you know, was a pedophile. He's a Republican.
But they're good fundamentalist Christian, though. That can't be right, Glenn.
It's pure ignorance. It's pure ignorance, period.
Well, my point is, though, is that we are, if we're not educating ourselves by finding out what's going on, we're educating ourselves by just watching television, for God's sakes. And, you know, most people do not consume the amount of news, the amount of information that the four of us do.
The internet is the best library in the world. It's the best source material for anything. You can find anything and everything you want if you look hard enough and long enough on the internet and have fun doing that instead of watching some mindless sitcom.
Right. Well, Jack, I might also say, let me go back into the 1950s when TV was coming up. Edward R. Murrow, the great journalist of his day, said, TV can either be the greatest educational tool or the biggest wasteland. Well, let's move now here to our current 2017. We have the internet. It can either be the biggest wealth of information and research material, or it can be the biggest wasteland.
That's why we've
nothing's
got to
changed.
Fight repeatedly for net neutrality. We've got to keep that.
Absolutely. That is
this.
Absolutely right, Jack.
God,
well,
it's just disgusting how they're trying to undermine that now.
Excuse me, you guys are throwing down some real heavy, you know, it's this or that or black and whites on the table. I got to tell you, I learned a great deal of lessons in who I am and the character I hold this day because I'd come home from school and watch the Hardy Boys on the Disney Hour. Okay?
there you go.
It's fucking true. I've learned a great deal by watching online what Jack loans me over to with Free Speech Network. I've learned a lot watching in my own gig, watching a surprise.
The Next System Project. What a great organization, and nobody knows. Hardly anybody knows about it. It's visionary people doing visionary things, setting up visionary things, creating activism. It's wonderful.
Good. They ought to mail you a dividend there, buddy. Yes, that sounds great.
Well, the Next System Project is revolutionary. It's great.
The art that is being produced right now is pretty awesome, in my opinion. I love a lot of shows because they tell a story that we need to hear. They're talking
Sort of drifting back towards the North Korean issue. I think the one of the main things to take away from, if anything, on this conversation is that there's this sort of almost, I would call, like a normalization of using nukes that is very disturbing to me right now.
It's becoming too palatable. It used to be horrendous and unthinkable. This pastor wants to make it his go-to move.
Yeah, they're trying to make it where using a nuke is just another way of warfare, and that's not the way it is. And anybody that's gone through the Cold War stuff and the terror that produced, they know that nuclear war is not the same thing as just dropping a few bombs like we have a tendency to do. And
it could mean the end of humanity, end of all life on Earth.
And it could rapidly be a country killer. So, the thing is this North Korean thing is not cast in stone. There's enough leeway that if enough people scream about it, no matter how ignorant our current leader is, he will still be forced not to attack North Korea. I think it's still at that point that enough public pressure can be applied that it can sway the decisions on that. And I think if perhaps China and Japan and Russia and South Korea sort of win on their own, leaving the United States out of it, that they perhaps could work on a deal that may be satisfactory to both North and South Korea. So
that's right. We got to keep our nose out of it for a change, especially with Trump's nose in there.
Yeah. I don't think we have a rational leader right now that can give
you. No, you know what we have? We have a president dunce. He's a president dunce. That's what he is. He's an idiot.
I don't think he's a dunce. I think he's going through some dementia, actually. I think he's actually ill.
Well, that's irrational nonsense, you know, is what that is.
Yeah, it is.
Delusion.
You know. Yeah.
Well, David, I gotta say this. Trump has always been this kind of an asshole, and everybody in New York and West Palm.
Yeah, I knew that. He did seem to have a
more of a
narcissistic ass. You know, he did have some sort of asshole decorum about him, I guess. But I mean, some of the stuff that Trump does now, where he will do something and then tweet something else and tweet something that causes himself more damage than anything, and getting petty little fights.
It's real delusional.
It's delusional.
Self-absorbed. I agree with you there. It is delusional, and there's
and
no
you know
one
that's dangerous. We need a guy that's clear thinking to be at the head of things, to have his clear thinking brain on that button, not a crazy guy.
And what's even more scary is that there's nobody that he has for an advisor that has enough force or leeway or persuasion with him to tell him to stay away from that Twitter. So
right,
that tells
it's crazy.
Me that he's just a tries to be a dictator in his own, you know, he will not listen for any kind of other advice.
He wants nothing but admirers lauding him all the way.
That's right. You know, there's always that scenario, you know, the businessman that surrounds himself with yes man.
Yep.
And then next thing you know, that company has gone under because everybody just played bobblehead yes to the guy who's the head of the company at the moment, and it destroyed destroyed the whole company.
Well,
this is, but the thing is, in this case, though, we are destroying our own country.
That much.
And as former Vice President Joe Biden observed recently, he says he hopes that this will be a singular event in American politics, that the Trump era will be a singular event and will never be repeated. And I couldn't agree more.
Well, we did have Andrew Jackson. You know, we've had some real beauts come through that office, and we've survived it.
Right.
This guy's really
extreme. He's doing shit that nobody ever thought of doing, which isn't good.
Yeah. I mean, even Nixon had some sort of strategic thought about it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he basically cared a lot about his international legacy. Actually.
Yeah, I mean, he opened relations with China and signed
but
the Clean Water Act and all that other stuff.
President a couple of days before.
I was going to say, let me interrupt here just real quick, Lynn, if I may. I want to bring this to people's attention. Well, those people that voted for him, because he's a good businessman, right? I wanted a businessman in that White House. Well, here's what that great businessman
did. Oh, bullshit. Yeah.
Because, let me get it out. When all this rhetoric, and we're going to build a fence, and those damn Mexicans, all they're doing is sending us rapists, we're just right, and the Mexicans going to build the wall. Mexico basically, Sensei told them, we're not going to pay for your fucking wall. That's a quote unquote from Sensei.
Right.
But, all right, but here is what the great businessman caused, in effect. Because of this rhetoric, Mexico has signed an agreement with Argentina for their soybeans, their wheat, and their barley, costing the
American farmers
in this country here $13 billion, that's with a B, folks, $13 billion of lost business. They signed the agreement with Argentina. Basically, they've got a great big two middle fingers pointing up north to our country because of Trump. And the farmer, the American farmer, is now suffering for it.
20 minutes ago, the president of the United States again tweeted that Hillary should be locked up for her email.
He's wacko. He's insane. That is really pathetic.
If this was a sitcom, people would have said it was too stupid to be real. It could be believable.
And there are, like you say, David, there are people that believe that, and I can't believe that either, but it is true. There are people out there that agree with that.
I talked with one on the airplane as I was flying back from my home in Maryland back to Columbus. I said, you know, Hillary killed people. And I guess you believe that, you know, remember the guy that came up from North Carolina with his rifle and his pistols because he was going to free those poor little kids in that pizza parlor in Washington, D.C., that Hillary Clinton was running a kiddie prostitution ring? Well, I believe that, too. She probably did. She probably, if they said that, it was true then. So I thought, whoa, bitch, you're nuts.
Yeah.
And what killed me?
I met somebody like this. I could not believe my damn ears.
Trump had an obsession with Hillary and the fact that she won the popular vote, and that just gets at him big time. He can't stand the whole idea. That guy is wackedly insecure. That is not a good move. Not a good thing for a president to be that insecure.
Worried
about himself.
I agree with you. The man is mentally ill. And there's been plenty of psychiatrists who said they want to be careful of diagnosing him from afar, but they have strong opinions and thoughts that the man truly has got dementia and is mentally ill.
He needs to be institutionalized. He's nuts.
Okay. What were you saying, David? I wanted to hear that.
No, there was it was the editor in chief at Vanity Fair. He used to always rag on. He was at either them or Spy magazine. They always called him a short-fingered Bulgarian, and it bugged him so much that he sent pictures of his fingers back to him for like 10 years. It just drove him crazy.
Somebody answer the phone.
Yeah, somebody's phone's ringing there.
Not mine.
We basically are at the top of the hour.
God. Well, so much for our discussion on Trump's lies. We'll have to do that another Sunday.
Well, it's all
we can fill about five.
This has been a really good discussion, folks. And yes, like I said, it's same we didn't go to Oliver Twice, but then again, an hour wouldn't have been enough for it anyway. This was a much more productive conversation.
Thank you, David, for coming on and giving us some.
Yeah, good to hear from you. Thank you. Please come back.
All right, we'll do. But in the meantime, that's good, man. Building on my doomsday bunker.
In the meantime, everybody, just remember, keep pushing forward.
Yeah, definitely.
Pushing forward and
pouring cement.
Yeah.
Get that bomb shelter built.
That's right. Yeah. Just a little bit of dark humor there.
That's always good.
Sometimes you just got to laugh about it, even though it's not very funny. But I mean, just keep your sanity.
Well, that's how you keep by laughing at it. That's how we, the normal folks, have to keep our sanity.
I mean, I always say the best movie ever about the Cold War was Dr. Strangelove.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. Riding that ICBM, clean. Yahoo! Little slim pickings.
All right. Toe to toe.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, let's hope a year from today we'll be able to sit back and keep laughing, and we'll be here to laugh, you know.
Absolutely.
We don't know what's going to happen. These are such uncertain times with such uncertain and crazy elements in the picture. It's very frightening. So just be courageous, people. Keep pushing forward, and we'll make it through.
There's always this. They take Trump out of office under whatever venue it gets him. Pence will go with him because Pence is.
I was going to say, you got to include Pence in with that because he's just as guilty about the treasonous aspect as any of them.
Yeah, that he's a crook too.
All right, guys, let me get it out, will you? Okay. So that happens, but Paul Ryan won't be Speaker of the House by then. Okay, so. I hate to think it's Pelosi, but whatever, you know, anything's better than what we have.
Is Mitch McConnell up for election too this time?
No.
Damn it.
No.
It'll be another 4 years for him, I think.
Yeah, he won by the skin of his teeth. He won by the skin of his teeth, and you know what? It was party Republicans who talked Ashley Judd out of running against him. And I think she might have won.
All right, guys, I'm going to have to sign off. Okay?
Okay, David, good to hear from you. Take care of yourself. Stay healthy, my friend. And happy holidays if we don't talk to you before.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye.
And thank you all. Wayne, Jack, for being here. And
it's always a pleasure.
Thanks for having us. It's great to be with you.
Good night, all. Take care.
Yep. Take care, Wayne.
Night.
Have a good week.
And you too, Jack. You have a really great week. And remember, people laugh a little bit more, and it is the holidays. Some peace on earth, goodwill towards men is always a good thing to say and to live with. So that's our show. We'll be here next Sunday at 6 p.m. This has been the Sunday show on Here Be Monsters Radio with Jack Jodell, Wayne Johnson, and myself, producer Gwen Berry. Jack, you still with me?
Yeah, I am. I'll just say one passing thing here. I Googled the lies of Donald Trump today, and there were 10,200,000 entries.
Jesus. Well, I read where it was 5 a day since last January.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sure he's exceeded that. It seems like that's a conservative number. Who knows?
I think what they were doing was they were counting his Twitter feed. It doesn't unless you take into all of the whole mess, as it were. Jack, have a great week. We'll be back next Sunday.
And you too, Gwen. We'll look forward to next Sunday. Take care, honey. Have a good week, everybody. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a good week.
And that's our show for tonight. Thank you, David, for being with us.